Welcome to a presentation titled Brewing with Coffee Approaches from Home Roasting to Dry Beaning. A couple of housekeeping things. Of course, cell phones, turn them off or put them on mute. There are restrooms right outside there. If you need to use them, do so quietly on your way in and out. We're allotted about an hour here, so we're going to do about 45 minutes for the presentation. Then we're going to try to leave 15 minutes for Q&A. It seems like there might be a good handful of Q&A for this kind of topic. We're going to run that from the microphone in the center of the room. So you'll approach, you'll ask your question so that we can preserve it on audio for archive's sake. We will have to also cut that off at a certain point. So after that, if you have questions for Jacob or Amy, we're going to try to kind of maybe move them out to one of the lobbies. Michael has a book signing at 2 o'clock, so you could probably chat with him there, but he will be like Michael Jackson style rushed to the book signing. Another housekeeping. There are
three beers?
Three beers coming during this presentation. We're going to have you... And this might be the worst idea ever. You're going to self-pour two of these beers. So be cool. Hashtag don't be a dick. And so two-ounce pours when you get them. There's a four-ounce line on your glasses, as you see. The two-ounce is just at or a little above the bottom of the graphics. So I believe that's it. Without further ado... We have three fine folks from Modern Times Beer from here in San Diego.
Yeah. Goodbye.
Oh. Amy Crone is the coffee director at Modern Times Beer, one of the only brewery / roasters in the world. Amy roasts every batch of coffee for the many coffee beers made at Modern Times. She works closely with the brewing staff to ensure maximum coffee radness. She's a longtime beer geek and is also responsible for many extremely rad beer label designs. Jacob McKean, founder and CEO of Modern Times Beer, 30-barrel production brewery tasting room in San Diego. Before going pro, Jacob was one of you, a longtime homebrewer obsessed with experimentation, brewing as much as once a week in a maniacal pursuit of brewing knowledge. Modern Times is an open-source brewery, publishing its recipes for homebrewers to tinker with to their heart's content. Yeah, let's bring it down a notch, y'all. Michael Tonsmeyer. Blogs about sour beers, as you likely know, with the Mad Fermentationist. Wrote the recently released brewer's publication, American Sour Beers. Develops recipes and microbes, grows microbes for the sour beer program at Modern Times. So, man, that's a lot of intro. It's usually... Here's one guy. Check it. So, without further ado, Modern Times Beer.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for coming out. This is a really great turnout. Stoked to see so much interest in making coffee beers. So, just to let you know what you're drinking right now, you've got Black House beer and coffee out there. So, the coffee is making its way around. I think everyone's got beer at this point. So Black House is our year-round oatmeal coffee stout, 5.8% ABV, a beer that started as a collaboration between me and Mike, trying to figure out what the core lineup for this crazy brewery would be. Obviously, it's evolved since then as we've scaled it up, and the coffee program has grown along with it, and we'll get into a lot of detail with all that stuff. The coffee that's going around is the what we call Black House Blend coffee, which is the coffee we use in the beer. We also sell it in bags at retail, and we do kegs of cold brew and all that. And we'll get into the detail about the origins and that and everything. But I just thought it would be really cool to have the beer in your hand and the coffee used to make the beer in your hand simultaneously. You can kind of do an interesting compare and contrast. So to get into the first few slides here, that was... That's a pint of Black House inside our first roaster, a little 2 kilo number that we thankfully just sold and got rid of. And I'll get into why that happened in a minute. So to answer the you know, the first question, why coffee beer and what's it all about? And, you know, we're as I mentioned, we're illustrating this with beers that we'll be pouring. You've got Black House now. Mega Black House is kind of the imperialized version of that beer, and I'll talk about how that how the use of coffee in that beer differed from the regular version. And then, as kind of a last-minute special surprise here, we ran a sixtel of Monsters Park aged in bourbon barrels with coffee over here. That is our 13% ABV Imperial Stout, aged for 6 months in Heaven Hill bourbon barrels, and then with Black House Blend coffee added. So that'll be the last one we'll do, obviously. And so, yeah, why coffee beers? Coffee is obviously a totally different animal than any of the other raw ingredients that go into beer. So you're able to create flavors and aromas that would otherwise be impossible. I mean, even with malts that are specifically intended to replicate the flavor and aroma of coffee, things like Kiln coffee malt and that sort of thing, you're still not going to get the full spectrum coffee experience, right? So, you know, I think our philosophy in general with adjuncts is we have to be very we're very deliberate about them, and we are going for a very specific profile, and we're not generally trying to do something that's just all one note, right? Like, we don't want to have a beer that is, it's like a beer that tastes like coffee. It's like, no, there's an interaction between these two drinks, and ultimately the combination is greater than the sum of their parts. So that's just kind of the starting point, right? Like, we're not just trying to make coffee in beer form. We're trying to join these two things and create like a synthesis that would not otherwise be possible. So a little bit about Modern Times and our coffee program. As you mentioned in the introduction, we're one of the only breweries that is a full-blown coffee roaster and a brewery. We've been roasting since we started at the very beginning. It was kind of a random thing, honestly. This was probably the only thing about Modern Times that was not like carefully considered. But in the midst of the startup process, I realized that we were going to be either purchasing a ton of coffee or we were going to have to find some other way to do it. I had to sort of give up homebrewing during the startup process and sort of outsourced it to Mike, because I spent all my time dealing with lawyers and real estate agents and all that sort of thing. And so I started home coffee roasting with Amy, and we were both coffee geeks to begin with, but it just became obvious really quickly that there was a lot of crossover potential here, and it just struck me immediately as being obvious and cool to be roasting our own coffee as well, if we were able to do it. So I bought this little 2-kilo roaster on Craigslist, kind of on a lark, got it shipped from the East Coast, and then we started roasting coffee. And obviously the learning curve has been steep, but we have the coffee program has grown so tremendously and matured so much in such a short period of time that we're now able to do some really cool things with it. As far as like the actual production of coffee goes, from everything from the supply chain to roasting to the things that go into it, it couldn't be more different than beer. I mean, there really are like two separate businesses under the same roof. But they're, in the final product, that's where they sort of come together. I think one of the things that's been really exciting about being a roaster and a brewer is that craft beer fans in general have really adventurous palates. They want to try weird stuff. And we have this unique opportunity of people coming into our tasting rooms to try unique beers, but then we're also simultaneously able to introduce them to an entirely new world of specialty coffee and all the different flavors and aromas that are possible there. And then we use coffee beer as kind of the crossover. So every time we do a new single origin coffee or whatever it is, we try to put it into a beer as well and use that as kind of a starting point for a conversation about coffee and what it can be. So next one. That's the Ambex YM2. That is the roaster that I bought on Craigslist that started the whole Modern Times coffee experience. It very quickly got to the point where roasting 2 kilos at a time was just not even remotely feasible. I'll talk a little bit about dosing rates and things like that later on, but at the scale that we're brewing at, when we put 22 pounds of coffee into a 30-barrel batch of beer and we're regularly brewing quad batches, making that much coffee, 2 kilos at a time, it was just ludicrous, never mind trying to sell bags to people and a cold brew and all that kind of stuff. So this is now what we roast on. It's a 15-kilo Giessen roaster. All the design work was custom, and it's an absolutely beautiful piece of industrial artwork imported from the Netherlands top-of-the-line machine, incredible control over so many different variables. This sort of makes us a big boy coffee roasting company and allows us to achieve a level of quality that was never before possible, and also to roast on a scale that wasn't possible, obviously. So if you guys come by the tasting room at any point, you can see the roasting area. We just finished building it like a day ago, it's a cool thing to see. So without further ado, Mike, you want to talk a little bit about the history of Coffee Bear?
So as you may know, Modern Times invented the idea of coffee beer about a year and a half ago. Who here, by show of hands, who here has brewed a beer with coffee in it? So obviously not very popular. You're all looking forward to hearing how we do. No, it's been an idea that really has been one of the hallmarks of craft brewing in America for the last 20 years. DivineBrew.com had sort of a little coffee beer retrospective. The earliest he could dig up a mention of coffee beer was Charlie Papazian in New Complete Joy of Homebrewer in 1991. He suggested adding freshly ground coffee to the secondary to extract the essence of the coffee, or that you could add it 5 minutes before you sparged, which was sort of a weird suggestion. And we'll get into exactly how we add and the different options sort of going forward. But really, coffee beers have been popular for a while. Early on, places like New Glarus's Coffee Stout, Red Hook Double Black were sort of really early innovators in coffee beer about 20 years ago. Since then, I mean, I think we all know things like Founders Breakfast Stout, the Bourbon County coffee beers. And there are really a lot of sort of weirder, more interesting things going on now, too. I really think sort of Jacob was talking about, you know, sort of the unique flavors you get in there. I think that's really why people are drawn to coffee beers. It really gives you this whole other level, you know, rather than just having a beer that has notes of coffee or notes of chocolate. It really, you know, adding coffee gives you coffee flavors, real coffee flavors. Coffee beans have something like 800 different aromatic and flavor active compounds. Wine has 400. So coffee, some people think of it as this very simple thing, and I'm drinking a cup of, you know, mediocre coffee from the lobby, and it's fine. But in the same way that, you know, Budweiser is, you know, sure, that's a beer, and it doesn't have a lot of interesting flavor, and it's pretty bland. Craft coffee really has a lot more going on than these sort of big macro blends where they just take whatever beans they can get cheap, throw them in, roast them to, you know, whatever the machine says, and move on. And the key with making a coffee beer is picking the right coffee to go with the right beer. So there's no single answer, and we've got a lot of slides that will come up. They'll say, hey, this is a great way to do it. This is how we do it, but you may not want to do it that way. And like anything in homebrewing, it comes down to figuring out exactly what works for your palate, what coffees work for you, and what coffees work for the beer you're brewing. So I'll be back up shortly. Wait, I'm talking about more. Excellent. This is just a super close-up shot of a bean. This gives you an idea of how light some coffee roasts are. I mean, I think a lot of people think of, you know, really dark brown, chocolate brown, black. A lot of more interesting coffees are a little lighter roast. They're not going to give you that big, harsh, roasted flavor, which you can get pretty easily from black patent or chocolate malt or roasted barley. Really, when I'm using coffee, I'm looking to fill in the flavors in a roast like that with some more interesting aromatics. You definitely will get some caffeine when you brew with coffee beer. There was a little bit of a scare a few years ago after they've cracked down on Four Loko, which was, a 12% alcohol, three times as much caffeine as a cup of coffee, fruit-flavored malt beverage. But luckily, sort of the answer was you can no longer add just purified caffeine to commercial beer. As homebrewers, you could if you wanted to. I don't think there's a great reason to, but you really honestly don't get a huge amount of caffeine. The amount of coffee we dose into Black House is only about 2 ounces in 5 gallons. And that's enough coffee to brew about a quart of coffee. So, I mean, you're diluting a coffee, you know, 1 to 20 essentially in beer. And so you've got about 5% of the caffeine. And that was borne out in some tests that Modern Times had run on Black House. So, honestly, I wouldn't worry about the caffeine too much. If you are someone who's extremely sensitive to it, you could consider decaf coffee. Decaf coffee has about 5% of the caffeine of non-decaf coffee. And so, honestly, the beer is going to have about the same level of caffeine as a regular decaf cup of coffee. Decaf coffee, there are some good ones out there. They're doing some CO2 extractions to get the caffeine out. There's a water method, but a lot of the sort of cheaper decaf. I mean, part of it is if decaf costs the same as non-decaf, odds are they're saving a little bit of money with lower quality beans because decaffeinated coffee costs money. And a lot of the cheaper methods involve solvents, and then they steam the coffee to try to remove the solvent, and maybe not all that, you know, nastier compounds are getting out, and you might be left behind with some ethyl acetate, which is an off flavor in beer, and some other things. So honestly, I would just go with regular, you know, caffeinated coffee. It's going to taste better, and, you know, hopefully no one's drinking, you know, coffee beer in the morning to wake themselves up, but...
You would need to drink 18 pints of Black House to get to a cup of regular standard coffee. So.
And Amy's going to talk about coffee bean origin and a lot of the science behind what we're doing.
Okay, so just to talk about coffee in general, I think a good place to start is to talk about the origin of coffee. Sort of like wine varietals, coffee origin varietals are going to kind of take on different terroirs of different countries. So your African coffees are typically going to be pretty fruity, somewhat acidic. Indonesian coffees will be sort of earthy and nutty. Your Central and South American coffees are going to be a little bit more mild and subtle. But also what's going to play a part in the flavor of coffee is the way you process the coffee. So when you pull the coffee cherry off of a tree, it's a fruit. You're going to have the pulp on the outside of the bean, and you've got to separate the pulp from the bean itself to prepare it for roasting. So there's a couple of different ways you can do that. One is to do the dry processing or natural process method, which is where you'll dry the coffee fruit on the bean itself, and then you'll remove that fruit from the bean once it's completely dry. And you'll get a lot of like fruity characteristics, sometimes a fermenty characteristic from that processing method. There's also the wet processing method, which is where you take the pulp off immediately after you harvest the coffee cherry, which will give you a little bit of a cleaner flavor in your coffee. The darker the roast, the less the origin is going to matter. So don't let anyone tell you how you want to drink your coffee or what you like. If you like a darker coffee, that's totally fine. You're probably going to get a lot more roast, a lot more bitterness. You're going to get less of those origin characteristics that you get from lighter roasts. And then blending coffee, there really aren't any rules. I guess the main thing to think about when you're blending coffee is you want to make a blend that's greater than the sum of its parts, which is what we do in all of our blends. For example, we do 75% Ethiopia to bring out some of the fruitiness, 25% Sumatra in our Black House blend, just to bring out that sort of coffee, chocolatey roastiness that you kind of all think about when you think of coffee. So I'll get a lot more into the chemical reactions of roasting a little bit later. They're going to hand out another blend, so you can taste another blend of ours. This is our summer blend. It's 50% Ethiopia Sidamo and 50% Burundi Kahere. All African, pretty bright, a lot of cherries and lemons. Anyway, as far as roasting goes, I'll go into a lot more detail later. Just a general overview. The times of your roast is going to vary greatly on how dark you want your roast to be. So I wouldn't recommend doing anything quicker than 8 minutes or anything longer than 17. Temperatures are critical. Obviously, you're cooking anything, you're going to need to have a pretty specific temperature. Drop temperatures will be around 375 to 425, again, depending on how dark or how light you want your roast. And then there's two really important chemical reactions that happen during roasting, which happen to happen during the brewing process as well. The Maillard reaction happens during the boil, as I'm sure many of you know. Caramelization of malts, also of the coffee beans towards the end of the roast. Rust periods and volatility of roasting. The general rule for rest period is that the darker the roast, the longer you're going to want to rest your coffee for. So all of our coffees are pretty light roasts. I usually give it 2 to 4 days. Darker roasts, you can go up to 7. You just really want the coffee to kind of mellow out. The roast character is going to play a huge part in the way your coffee tastes, but if you give it a couple days, the roast character is going to mellow out. You'll be able to taste more of those origin characteristics. And then importance of freshness. On the same note, if you wait too long, your coffee will taste a little stale. So I wouldn't go past like 3 or 4 weeks. And then again, whatever works best is subjective to you. Whatever you're using the coffee for, whether it's espresso or beer or a pour over, you could prefer a light or you could prefer a dark roast. It's totally up to you. This is super fun. This is a super close-up version green coffee. As you'll see, it's pretty porous. So green coffee is going to have residual water. It's about 10 to 12% water content. All of those pores before you roast it are filled with water. After you roast it, they're filled with air. Coffee is extremely volatile. So if you put coffee next to a bag of turmeric, it's going to smell or taste like turmeric. If you put it into a dry bourbon barrel, it's going to taste like a bourbon barrel, which we'll pass around some bourbon barrel aged coffee grounds soon. And you'll kind of see the difference between the regular coffee and then the bourbon barrel aged coffee. So it can either be a really gross thing or it can be a really good thing, depending on how you do it. So this is like the layman's Maillard reaction. I'm sure everyone has maybe looked into what happens during the Maillard reaction, and it's like daunting how many chemical reactions happen during this thing. So I'll just briefly go through what happens a little bit in the Maillard reaction during roasting. So the main thing to remember is that it's a non-enzymatic reaction. All you need for the Maillard reaction is sugar and amino acids, and they do their thing. Technically, it's happening right now in any green coffee, I'll bet, very slowly. So first you get your sugar and your amino acids, and they combine to form N-glucosamine. Some of those N-glucosamine are like pretty stable. They're ready to go on to the fourth step. A lot of them are pretty unstable, so they'll go through a second set of reactions, the Amadori or the Heinz rearrangement, to create additional compounds, which will then go on to the Strecker degradation. And up until the third step, you don't see any flavor or color compounds happening. It's not until the third step where you'll start to see some of those aromatics, the pyrazines or the pyridines, which will give you the nuttiness or the bitter components in the smell of your coffee. And then last, you'll go on to the melanoidins, which will give you those long strains of brown-colored polymers, which will give you the color in your coffee. Super important Maillard reaction facts. The Maillard reaction will double for every 10 degree and increase in temperature. So you can kind of see in those graphs at the bottom how they're going up pretty quickly. As the bean will enter later roasting stages, the water that's in those pores is gonna evaporate or change, and it's gonna increase the potential reactions. But what's so fascinating about the Maillard reaction in coffee roasting is that some of those compounds are just gonna reach a peak and then very quickly drop off. So you'll see the acetic acid will hit that top point, and then it'll come right on down once you get into the later stages of roasting, which is really fascinating because some of them don't. So it really explains in why darker roasts, you'll get more of that bitter and astringency, and lighter roasts, you'll get more of acidic coffees. The other non-enzymatic reaction is caramelization, which is different from the Maillard reaction because it doesn't require a nitrogen source or those amino acids, and usually doesn't happen until you reach higher temperatures. There's two main carbohydrates in green coffee that will caramelize, which are sucrose and polysaccharides. 90% of sucrose is going to be depleted during roasting and turn into a whole slew of different compounds, one of which is that acetic acid that we saw earlier. On the same note, over-caramelization can be a bad thing and will end up tasting bitter if you kind of let that coffee go too far into roast. So this is really fun. I was kind of trying to decide how to show y'all how to roast, but I couldn't bring a roaster because, obviously. So there's a couple of sensory analysis that you can kind of gauge to see where your coffee is at during the roast. One is the smell or the olfactory. The other is your vision. So just to kind of quickly go through this, at 2 minutes, your coffee will be at about 212 degrees, and the water inside the coffee is going to begin to boil. 4 minutes, your Maillard reaction begins. Starts to smell a little bit like fresh-cut grass, around 275. 5 minutes smells like hay. In 6 minutes, you see that really darkening of the coffee, which is when the caramelization of sugars begins. 8 minutes, up until the 8 minute point, the coffee has been taking in heat. It's been endothermic. At 8 minutes, it starts to release the heat and becomes exothermic. At 10 minutes, you'll hear an audible cracking sound when all of that carbon dioxide is releasing itself and actually fracturing the surface of the bean, which is what roasters refer to as first crack. At 11 minutes, this is just when I take this particular coffee out. This is the Ethiopia Hambella that you guys smelled earlier in the Black House blend. You can start to smell some of those varietal characteristics. So for all of you who are super curious about home roasting, there's a few different things you can do. The first one is you can put a bunch of green coffee on a cookie sheet and you can throw it in your oven at a really high temperature and kind of watch the process happen. I wouldn't recommend drinking it because it's probably going to taste pretty crappy. But you can definitely see the process and you can see first crack and the Maillard reaction take place. If you want to get a little bit more adventurous, use just a pan with a lid on the stovetop. You'll get some better results. You'll probably get a lot of tipping and scorching, which is when the ends or the outside of the bean will roast faster than the inside, which will lead to some off flavors. Or, which is, I use the Whirly Pop when I first started home roasting. It's just a popcorn maker. You sit there spinning it. It's $41. It's super cheap. So for the roaster curious, it's definitely the option that I would recommend. For a more serious home roaster, you could use any of these three things you can find on the internet. The Bowmore 1600 is your cheapest option. Any of these will be a little profile on. All are great if you want to get a little bit more into home roasting. And then you can use an air popper. I've never done this before. I'm sure a lot of you have. I know I have. Mike has. it's totally different than the previous roasters that I showed you. It's all convection heat. Everything I showed you before was conduction heat. So it's going to roast differently, but you can still get decent results with an air popper. This is Mike's air popper. It's a little abstract. Where to buy green coffee? These are two excellent resources. Sweet Maria's is a website dedicated strictly to home roasting. You can buy anything from green coffee beans to any of the roasting apparatuses I showed you before to bags for your coffee. Also, Bodhi Leaf will sell, they'll parcel off some of their bigger lots into home roasting, like 1 pound or 5 pound bags. Some of the best coffees I've ever roasted have come from Bodhi Leaf.
Some homebrew stores sell green coffee as well.
There you go.
And hydroponic gear.
So when I evaluate any coffee, the first thing I look for is off flavors. So anything that's going to taste phenolic or woody or papery, often referred to as baked, those are bad things. Anything that's flat is probably an off flavor in coffee. Something really important, I've had lengthy discussions with some people about off flavors in coffee or in beer that are not off flavors in coffee. So butteriness is actually a really desirable characteristic in coffee. So if you taste butteriness in your coffee, it's not it is diacetyl, but it's not bad. acetic acid is an amazing thing for coffee. So is green apple, as well as corn. All off flavors in beer that aren't off flavors in coffee. A way to taste a bunch of different coffees at one time is through cupping, which is you basically just take a 4-ounce cup, you put 8 ounces of coffee and fill it with hot water, and then you can kind of taste a bunch of different coffees at one time. But I think probably the most accessible way to taste your coffees is just by preparing them the way you would when you make your coffee in the morning. So by hot preparation or cold preparation, doesn't matter. It's going to show you a lot about what is and isn't in your coffee. And then just kind of as a side, it's super easy to keg cold brew. The way we do all of our cold brew kegging at Modern Times is to brew it in a homebrew bucket and then keg it by gravity. So all of you who have a kegging setup could very easily do it yourself and put it on your kegerator. And then to taste coffee in beer, just do a cold steep. So just take a small amount of coffee, throw it in beer, and then taste it. It's how we tasted the 20-plus coffees we were trying to decide on for Black House Blend. Really fun day. This is cupping cups. just for all you who are curious about cupping. And then I leave this to Mike.
So we're going to talk a little about what sort of base beer you might work with. Obviously, the most common is dark beers, porter, stout, brown ale, those sorts of things. One of the things when we were developing the Black House recipe that really surprised me was the influence of small changes in the malt bill and how they influenced sort of the final flavor with the coffee. I was one of these people who wasn't a big believer in base malt mattering for dark beers. I mean, Black House, I think at the time, probably had 6 malts. It's now grown a little from there. But we started doing Maris Otter. But being a commercial brewery, we wanted to have one base malt that we could use for the Saison and the hoppy beers and the stout, and so we switched it to American Two-Row. And my assumption was, you know, hey, it's just Maris Otter. It's just a little bit darker. We've already got chocolate malt, and we've already got roasted barley, and we've already got some crystal malt, and we've got oats, and we've all these things. How much is that little bit of a change going to, you know, influence it? And it was really profound. That second batch of Black House that had Maris Otter had this really amazing balanced chocolate coffee, really interesting complex nose. And then the next batch, where the only switch was going from Maris Otter to Pale American Two Row, it was just really flat. Just it was plain coffee, one dimensional. It really lost that sort of interest. And it took the brewers quite a few more batches to figure out that we needed some Kiln coffee malt, we needed some pale chocolate malt, we needed some biscuit malt. It was very funny being the home brewer in the room going, guys, we don't need 8 malts. And they kept going, no, we'll try this, a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that. And it really ended up working perfectly. I mean, it took a little bit of time to get everything in the right balance, but that really helped. One of the sort of newer concepts in coffee beers is doing coffee IPAs. I don't think anyone was doing this 5 or 6 years ago, and now there's a few dozen of them out there. And this is just really a different way to think about coffee beer. So rather than adding coffee to a beer that's already roasty, that already has a lot of those familiar flavors from coffee or chocolate, adding it to a beer that's pretty pale. And some of these single origin coffees, and particularly the lighter roasts, have bright, fruity, citrusy flavors that are actually a great match for American hops. Doing Citra along with, say, a pale roasted coffee really brings an interesting additional dimension to it. And you can add sort of these deeper, malty-like flavors from the coffee, too, without having to add a bunch of crystal malt or something that's going to add sweetness to it. I think generally, if you're going with a darker beer, you want to build in some sweetness to the beer. People are so used to having coffee that isn't, you know, straight black coffee. So many people do cream or sugar in their coffee. You certainly don't need to do lactose, although that's a great option if you don't mind having lactose, if you're not lactose intolerant or vegan like certain people. Or one of the great things about adding lactose is that you can do it to taste at kegging or at bottling. So if you're messing around with the malt, you know, the malt, or you're changing the mash profile, or you're choosing a less attenuated strain, you have to do that before you know what the beer tastes like. I really don't think there's any reason to add lactose in the boil until, you know, if you've really dialed in a recipe and you know that this recipe always needs 1/2 pound of lactose, fine. But the first time you're using it, leave the lactose out, taste the beer after it's fermented when it's ready to bottle. You may not need any. It may taste fine as is. Lactose is only about 20% as sweet as sucrose. And so it's not going to make your beer sort of super sugary. It's going to add body. It's going to add a little bit of residual sweetness. But it's an easy way to dose in later on, sort of adjust the flavor profile if that coffee's gotten a little too bitter or a little too astringent for you. If you're sort of, we'll talk about, you know, sort of amounts on some of these beers. We were talking about 2 ounces of coffee in 5 gallons for regular Black House. We found that the bigger the beer is, the more coffee you need. So if you're doing something like Mega Black House, you're going to need at least 2 times as much coffee. A lot of people actually suggest a lot more coffee. I've seen a lot of recipes that call for 1/2 pound or 1 pound of coffee. To me, it's just way too much coffee. Really, I mean, the goal for me with a lot of these flavor additions is to have it be beer with coffee and not just, you know, coffee-flavored alcoholic beverage. Barrels are a great match for it, too. We'll talk a little about barrel-aged coffees shortly. But for barrel-aged beers that have that vanilla or have that caramel from the wood, those are really fun additions to play with, contrasting and complementing the coffee. Here's a slightly lighter beer I did. This was a blonde ale, although it was actually a little darker even before the coffee went in. But just Cascade hops, you know, real sort of bright citrusy to go with a little bit of, there's a cool little roaster near me in Annapolis called Ceremony that does a lot of single origin, weirder things. Jacob will be talking a little bit more about this, but this is a green coffee bean that was aged in a bourbon barrel for a couple of months and then roasted. It's really amazing when you brew coffee with this. It ends up like tasting like Kahlua. There's probably very little alcohol in it, but it has a lot of those same sort of vanilla notes. And they've done a couple of beers with it, too, and they'll talk about sort of the specifics on how and when and why you might think about that. So when you're brewing coffee beer, you have all sorts of options. I think sort of the most standard one that a lot of people go to is brew a pot of coffee just like you would, you know, with your automatic drip machine or with your percolator or with your French press, and dump it into the beer. This is easy. It's quick. You can make a hot extract in just a couple of minutes and just dose it into taste. When you brew coffee hot, you tend to extract more of the bitterness, more of the acidity from it. And those are generally things that you don't necessarily want in a beer. So we sort of gravitated away from that. And also just on a production scale would be a lot trickier to deal with. You could certainly add it to the mash or the boil. Honestly, I did some tests where the first time I did a coffee beer years ago where I made coffee and then boiled it for an hour, it doesn't taste real good. And so I really don't see a good reason to add coffee early in the process. I think of it a lot like using hops. The later you can add it, the more true coffee flavor you're going to get. There are a lot of breweries that do it in the Whirlpool or the Hopback, just sort of out of ease, and those work fine. It's just a little bit harder to control. I mean, coffee can be very, precision is very important, how long it's brewed for, the temperature, those sorts of things, and it can be a little tricky to do that with, you know, the wort. I also think as fermentation goes on, the yeast produces all that CO2. It chases out a lot of the more delicate aromatics. So just like dry hopping, my preference is to do it as late as possible. You can do cold brewed coffee, and that works really well. So just, you know, crush your coffee beans, cover it with water, put it in the fridge for 24 hours, strain it through a coffee filter. It works pretty well. It's easy to control the dosing. You know, you really can, you know, take a sample of your beer, add a little to taste, scale it up when you get the right balance. I found that cold brewed coffee tends to fall off a cliff a little bit faster. If you're doing a relatively fresh beer, you're doing a coffee IPA, it will work perfectly. But if you're doing, say, an imperial stout with coffee, I think you're a lot better off adding the beans directly to the beer. I'm not entirely sure what the science on it is. I assume that having alcohol in the beer helps to, you know, alcohol is a great extractant. It's going to pull out more compounds, probably more stable way. And so I think that's a lot better way to do it. For MR times, we do between 2 and 5 ounces. So again, 2 ounces for sort of something relatively mellow. 5 ounces or maybe even a little bit more if you're doing the big bourbon barrel aged imperial stout or IPA or something like that.
Speaking of which, we should pour. Tell them to pour.
Oh, yeah. Can we pour the last beer?
Is that for 5 gallons?
That's for 5 gallons. And it's very quick, too, like 12 hours, 24 hours, maybe 48 hours. If you leave it too long, the beer will start pulling out compounds you don't want in there. And as a result, we've gravitated towards whole bean rather than coarse cracked or finely ground. If you do fine ground, it's a very small window that sort of coffee flavor will be at the right level. Doing whole beans, it will take you an extra 12 hours or an extra 24 hours, but I think it's worth it. You know, most of us homebrewers, you know, you can't sit there every 4 hours pulling a sample of your beer. You know, 4 in the morning, you might hit the perfect coffee level, and by noon the next day, it might be over-extracted. Again, you know, we're looking for a real balanced coffee profile. If you're looking for something more aggressive, by all means add more. But if I were you, I would start on the low end and add more coffee after 24 hours if it needs it. You know, maybe pull that first edition, add more. It's always easier to add additional flavor to a beer than it is to take out flavor, which involves aging, blending, those sorts of things, or some sort of high-tech reactor that could separate coffee aromatic molecules from... We have one of those, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's very valuable. This is Black House on Nitro, which sadly we don't have. And I think Jacob's going to talk a little about Nitro beer.
So just to reiterate a couple points Mike just made about the dosing rate stuff. unfortunately, adding coffee to beer, there's a little bit of this like culture of like machismo around it, where it's like the more coffee, the better. It's like, dude, this batch got 100 pounds of coffee, and it's like when I hear that comment and then I taste those beers, all I can think is like, you never hear people being like, man, I made the saltiest goza, like so much salt. It's just like more is not more, you know, with coffee. And I mean, I guess if you're trying to do something that is really going to be impressive exclusively in a small, poor environment, like a festival or a bottle share or something like that, then, you know, by all means, go nuts. But if you're trying to make beer that people would actually want to drink by the pint, I think the rates that we're talking about, and especially the dosing method, you know, adding whole bean coffee to cold finished beer, I really feel strongly that's the way to go, and that's the result of a lot of blind tasting in-house, doing our own experimentation, and then also tasting a lot of commercial examples. So nitrogenating, obviously this is something that applies to both beer and coffee. It changes the beer quite a bit more than you would expect, and I think one of the biggest components of that is pH, right? CO2 is acidic, whereas nitrogen is not, and so coffee being a big contributor of acid to beer, you're going to get a pretty different flavor. It does mute the aroma. Having those CO2 bubbles rushing out of the glass definitely throws coffee aroma into your headspace, and that's a key part of the experience, I think. But if you were to taste, you know, like Nitro Black House alongside regular Black House, it's really not like one is better than the other. It's more that they are just different experiences. It's less aromatic, certainly, on Nitro, but there are also other beneficial elements to it that come from that pH difference and also from that really creamy, like chuggable body that you get from the Nitro. It's also attractive, which is a nice bonus too. And then as far as nitrogenating coffee, you've probably heard about this. There's a lot of more adventurous coffee roasters experimenting with this now. It's definitely a fun way to serve cold brew. I think some of this does risk getting into the territory of novelty. And so I think you really have to think about, you know, what is the good reason for doing this and what is the setting and appropriate reason for it. And so, you know, it can quickly get into this kind of thing where it's like nitro everything. And it's like, it's certainly fun and it can be delicious, but I think a certain amount of restraint makes sense. Then also trying to pair the method with like the right type of coffee. I wouldn't necessarily want to nitrogenate like a super high note, acidic, fruity coffee. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that you could talk about in that regard. But again, this is something that's accessible to the ambitious home brewer. Certainly, you could make yourself a 5-gallon keg of cold brew, get it as cold as humanly possible, and then shake a bunch of nitrogen in it until you've got a good result. And then you could serve that on a nitro tap. One thing that I think is really worth mentioning about making and serving cold brew at home is that it has to be pushed with pure nitrogen. You can't use CO2 or beer gas. Either of those things will acidify and carbonate the coffee, and you really, I've done it, and it's really not a good thing. The nitrogen will not dissolve in coffee at refrigerator temperature, and so that's really the only way to actually get regular coffee out of your tap if you're doing it that way. All right, so barrel-aged beans. We're running out of time, so I'll go super quick here. We passed around some of those barrel-aged beans. What do you guys think of those? How they smell? Good? Cool. Okay, so yeah, green coffee is super porous, soaks up whatever is around it, as Amy pointed out. We did a bunch of experimentation with this and figured out kind of what we like and what works best. Certainly spirit barrels are the punchiest and the most aggressive. We've tried wine and fortified wine. Those are definitely a lot more subtle. You get oak pickup from those barrels, but you don't get nearly as much of the native character of whatever was sitting in there before. Again, for the ambitious home brewer or roaster, barrel aging is certainly possible. You know, grab yourself some 5 to 8 gallon, use spirit barrels, dry, definitely dry, but well sealed. pour in the green coffee. And if you have the ability to sample roast, you know, pull it out starting at 1 month and just go from there. We find that between 1 and 4 months, depending on the barrel, a super punchy barrel at 1 month is going to be more than enough, way more than enough in some cases. And then as far as roasting these coffees, you do risk, burning off what makes them awesome with a dark roast. So we definitely lean towards light. And then, as far as using it for regular coffee preparation, I feel pretty strongly, having experimented with all of this, that hot preparation is the way to go, whatever your preferred method, French press, pour over, AeroPress. We've made cold brew, and it's delicious, but it is not as aggressive or as exciting, I think. It doesn't pull out as much as hot preparation. And then, adding it to beer is a very logical next step and certainly something that we've done. We recently released a rum barrel-aged version of Monsters Park with rum barrel-aged coffee added to it, so gets a little bit meta, barrel upon barrel upon barrel. But the beer was delicious, and it has a totally unique and distinctive character, kind of like the browned outside of a marshmallow is how I would describe it. It's really not something that I could compare to anything else. I really wanted to bring one of those beers today, but we make them in such limited volumes that I actually didn't even have a single keg to offer today. But you could certainly either make or buy barrel-aged beans and add them yourself. The only downside there is they're expensive, hard to make, but worth it, I think, ultimately. And that's beans going into the barrel with the cut-off top of a yeast container. And Mike, I think you kind of covered some of this ground, but give it back to you.
For 2 seconds before questions. So there are a bunch of different ideas. We poured three roasty coffee beers. I talked about coffee IPAs. Stone did a collaboration with Two Brothers, which is one of the only other breweries that has a roaster on site. People are getting into white stout, which I feel is a little bit gimmicky. But it's sort of, the idea of getting that roast character just from the coffee, normally a much higher rate. Noble Ale Works does about 0.5 pound of coffee in 5 gallons. You can use flavored coffees, although, again, I think you're better off using coffee and flavoring separately. You may get too much hazelnut character from hazelnut coffee and not enough coffee, or vice versa. I'd rather decouple those. You can do adjuncts, though, maybe inspired by those. Modern Times does a chocolate coffee coconut version of Black House. That sort of flavors that all work together. Look to flavored coffees maybe to inspire what other flavors you might want to add to a coffee beer. You can even use coffee cherries, the part that's fermented off in coffee production. Ale Apothecary does Be Still with a little bit of dried coffee cherry added in. It's a sour beer. Otherwise, sour beers and coffee really don't go together particularly well. We've got the recipe for Black House here, but it's also on the Beersmith Cloud and linked from the website. And in the 10 minutes or so we have remaining, we're happy to answer any questions about coffee beers, barrel-aged coffee, roasting at home, whatever you're interested in, questions about the beers you drank.
We'll go to the mic.
Head to the mic if you have a question.
Specifically the over-extraction. I've had a few beers, homebrews and professional beers, that have had a green bell pepper flavor. Is that what you're kind of considering your major off flavor?
That's it, yeah. Green bell pepper flavors for coffee?
Oh, God, you've got to get so close to this thing. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. It depends, really, on what you're going for. Some people find that green bell pepper flavor to be novel. Other people think it's totally disgusting, so... really, it just depends on what you like and what you're using it for. If you're putting that in beer, you probably don't want that.
Yeah.
If you're drinking it as a cup, it's probably okay.
Is that from over-extraction or is that from something
It's else? Not from over-extraction.
It's not, okay.
No, it's probably it's just...
It is a varietal character of the coffee.
Yes.
Okay.
Or it could be a something that happened during the roast.
Got it. Thank you.
Just wanted to ask the question more towards... taking your whole beans and how you're actually putting them into the tanks. I've worked with coffee commercially and obviously on the homebrew side. And just wondering if you guys put them in nylon bags, whole bean, certain weights, drop them in, etc.
Whole bean into nylon bags, straight into the fermenter cold, so post-crash. And it is not the easiest way to do it, but it is the only way that we figured out to add whole bean at that stage in the process. The real problem occurs when you're trying to haul the nylon bag filled with beer-saturated beans out of the tank. Either the integrity of the bag becomes an issue or simply like the safety of pulling something like that out of there. So we're very careful with it, but it's laborious. But again, you know, side-by-side tasting of all the different methods, cold brew concentrate, whatever else it was, this was by far the one we liked the best. And so we just made the commitment to find a way to do it on a commercial scale, you know, as safely and expediently as possible. But it's honestly not ideal.
As a home brewer, it's much easier. I don't even bag them up. They float, and they're small enough that they won't get picked up by the auto siphon or the tubing that you're using. So I just let them float in there, and they'll sink to the bottom eventually or, you know, be floating and easy to avoid.
Have you guys noticed any problems with flavor stability over time? Coffee does get kind of stale and gross after a while if you just let it sit by itself. So, you know, if you leave it in the coffee for... You know, take it out of the coffee, but does the coffee beer kind of get a little stale over time? Or if so, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a shelf life on coffee beers. The coffee flavor in beer is going to dissipate after a while, just as the same way that hoppy beers are going to dissipate in flavor. I'm not sure if there's a way to fix that.
I mean, dissolved oxygen. I would think of them exactly the same as a heavily dry hop beer. I mean, we're literally using the same methodology, and the result, we're trying to achieve very much the same results, huge aroma. Aroma is the first thing, of course, to fall off. UV and DO are going to be the big enemies of that thing, and will cause it to taste like, you know, at a certain point, yes, with enough DO and light, it's going to taste like the office carafe at 4 p.m. on a Friday. And so, yeah, you've really got that, like, that fairly short window at the beginning, probably about 3 to 4 months is kind of the what I would call the sweet spot. Anything beyond that, it is like an older, you know, heavily dry hop beer. It's gonna fall apart.
Thanks.
Cool.
Hi guys, g'day. Longtime fan. I've been buying your coffee since day one. I made a very complex homebrew, and I aged it for 7 months, and it was one part rye barrel aged first version and two parts black house.
Oh, cool.
And I did a cold brew, like a dry hop with it, and it was unbelievably fruity. There was a lot of cherries and vanilla, but I kind of lucked out. First time I've done it with coffee, and I took it out after 24 hours. I wanted to keep it in there for 7 months, but I didn't. So 24 hours, I just want to know, like, would there have been of more benefit to leave something in there for something that I know is going to be aged on oak, or something I know that's going to go forever and ever and ever? Would you consider that that's overkill, or that's going to ruin the coffee? Would you say that in the future, should I be doing it for more than that time?
I think you're right to do it for a short time. I would personally lean towards adding the coffee after the 7 months of aging.
Okay.
So
yep.
Waiting until that beer, sort of like dry hopping. When I do a dry hop sour, I'll sour it and let it go until it's basically ready, and then just give it that last sort of flourish with the dry hops. I'd think of coffee the same way. Wait until the beer has aged and mellowed, add the coffee for 24 or 48 hours until the flavor's right, and then bottle it or keg it as quickly as possible and enjoy it.
Excellent. So almost like when you're bottling it, that's when assuming that you're going to be bottling it right then, have the coffee flavor just in.
Exactly, because then you can drink the beer when the coffee's at its best rather than adding the coffee and then aging it for 7 months, and who knows how good that coffee character will be after that.
Well, on that note, please make more rye barrel-aged coffee.
I'll do what
will
I can.
12 ounces didn't go far. Thank you.
I think I'm a little short. My question is about the color, because I find the disconnect of drinking a coffee beer that is light-colored is kind of an amazing thing. Can you talk a little bit about how you make a coffee beer or a coffee IPA that doesn't turn dark brown like a cup of coffee?
I mean, I think we're really using not that much coffee. I mean, so it's essentially 1/20th the amount of coffee as coffee. So it's really only going to add 1/20th the color that of a full brewed coffee. If you want, you know, I would also lean towards making, I sort of made the mistake on my coffee blonde, I add some Crystal 60 or something. I would go for as light as you possibly can. You know, use Pilsner malt, use wheat. You know, if you want to use Crystal malt, go with Carapils or Crystal 10,
so
something like that.
I'm a slightly different direction in that I make mead. My coffee mead is mm-hmm. Dark brown mead. I used cold brew. So if I were to use straight beans in the secondary, I would have more of a chance of not turning coffee colored.
Do you know what rate you're using for coffee?
Probably like how much coffee? Way too much.
A lot of people who do meads really go for that real intense flavor. And it may just be that you're using sort of that higher end of coffee. A lighter bean would certainly help. You know, a lighter roast. Look for something like a city roast or
City or just medium or light roast.
And also whole bean. You're going to get less color extraction from whole bean than you will from ground.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Hi, I have two questions about this intriguing idea of putting green beans in a bourbon barrel. One is, how do you get them out? Considering that, you know, if it's a fresh barrel, we want to repurpose it and put a beer in it. And then, of course, you know, the second question is, what happens if you get some green beans trapped in there? Are there any ill effects on, say, a second use of a beer in there?
I get my beans out with a shop vac.
Wait, say that again?
I bought a completely new, clean shop vac, wiped it out, and sanitized it, and then I just got a pool hose that I attached so it would fit inside the bunghole, and I scoop it out with a shop vac.
Classic.
And then to answer the question about reusing the barrels, so we have had good success reusing the barrels, but we have not tried with clean beer. So we have immediately... second use, you know, post coffee aged barrels have become funkier sour barrels. So, there's no, short of taking the head off the barrel, which is an option and something we've been doing more and more, it is impossible to get everything out of there of that size. But taking the head off is a legit option. Short of that, I'd say you might end up with a couple of green beans in there. Not the end of the world.
Yeah. Thanks. I mean, there are, things on the outside of green beans that will probably turn your beer funky anyway. Try clean beer. Let me know how it goes.
We'll just wrap up with the two questions in line, but I'm going to butt in because I can. And I want to ask if you could explain real quick just the processes behind this beer, since we didn't really necessarily. So this is barrel-aged beans and barrel-aged beer.
Sadly not. Yeah, just barrel-aged beer with Black House Blend coffee. So as Mike was describing and answered the question about the aging time, 6 months of barrel aging, and then at the very end, once the beer was transferred out of the barrel and into the packaging vessel, then dosed with coffee. And then the other nice thing about that too is like it gives you the opportunity to adjust, right? So with bigger, more aggressive beers, you're going to have to up the dosing rate over what you normally do. The coffee is going to have to compete with a lot of other flavors and aromas. And so, you know, doing it at the very end really gives you the maximum control of feeling that out, because we're able to do, you know, 24 to 48 hours at the first dose, taste the beer, smell it, remove that initial dose of coffee, add another dose on top of that, kind of the way people do like two dry hop doses, things like that. It works really well. So,
yes, I was wondering if you could touch base on the way manufacturers decaffeinate coffee.
On the way manufacturers decaffeinate?
Yeah. What processes they use?
So the main process is called a Swiss water process, which I am not terribly familiar with, just to put that on the table. But basically what happens is they will do some fancy work with water, taking the decaffeination out. And then they will take that same water after they've taken all the decaffeination out and rehydrate the coffee bean and then dry it that way.
So essentially they're adding back the flavors that were leached out along with the caffeine without the caffeine.
But it changes the coffee in a way that's kind of irreversible. You can't get exactly the same flavors that you would in decaffeinated coffee as you would in caffeinated.
And it's kind of, you can actually decaffeinate like tea this way on your own. So the first flush of tea, of hot water on any caffeinated food is going to take 90% of the caffeine out the first time. So if you want to make like decaf tea, make yourself a pot of tea the way you normally would, except dump the water after the first like 10 seconds and then put the water back in and prepare it as you normally would, and then you've got more or less decaf coffee or tea or whatever.
So I've got two questions. First one is the Black House blend, is that the dry process?
The Ethiopia is. The Sumatra is not.
Okay. And then my second question is, I've never heard anybody talk about the water chemistry during coffee brewing process, and if that changes the flavors, kind of like your water chemistry would on like an IPA versus a stout
yes,
or something.
Yes, absolutely. We did kind of on accident an experiment at home where we had completely neutral water and we brewed a cup of coffee with it and it was so gross.
So like RO, reverse osmosis water, or distilled or something like that?
The Specialty Coffee Association of America has done a lot of research on the amount of elements that should be in water and should not be in water for coffee brewing. If you go on the SCAA.com website, you can find an entire book on it. It's really scientific and hard to get through, but fascinating also.
Thank you very much for coming out.
We're doing this again tomorrow.